You have some questions.
Excuse me.
You didn't have to go out.
Excuse me, I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
How are you?
Thank you. We're just about to begin. The ICANN CEO has just arrived and will be beginning momentarily for people on the line participating remotely. Thank you. I thank you all for gathering for the leaders and representatives of the commercial stakeholder group of the GNSO who are here for our GNSO intersessional meeting. We also welcome those who are participating online, and we'll have be monitoring that to make sure that you can be part of this conversation and ask questions. We are fortunate to have a good bit of time with our CEO, Fani Shahade, to talk to you about some of the organizational and other activities that he is instituting here at ICANN and other issues that you may want to raise with him. So without any further introduction, I'll turn it over to our CEO.
Fani. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. Okay. I'm hoping everyone can hear me all right. Good morning. Welcome to LA. Welcome to ICANN. This is the last time you'll come to the ICANN headquarters, because soon we will no longer have one headquarters, we'll have three headquarters around the world. We're already at work, and we will present our final plan to the board this week. And if approved, we will move forward with dividing ICANN's headquarters into three hubs around the world. So that's moving already, and in good progress, and all the planning for that is looking quite good. But at least we welcome you to one of the buildings that will remain, one of the three headquarters for our organization. We moved here recently, and I'm sure you've noticed we have, this was a very contested part of Los Angeles for over a decade, with a lot of fighting over whether to develop it at all, because we have some, I guess, natural birds or preserve in that area that have been here for a long time, and finally, they've agreed to build a few buildings, but we had to preserve all the gardens and the areas where our employees enjoy tremendous, really good time at lunch. And given our weather, which I'm not going to speak about, I'm sure you can see it for yourselves, it allows us to go out quite often and enjoy ourselves. So we're glad to be here in this new building, and it's your building. It's your office as well, so I'm glad you're here. I just came back, and so I'll share with you a couple of things top of my mind, and frankly, would like this to be an exchange, a dialogue. This was my first time to go and represent ICANN at the World Economic Forum in Davos, or Davos, as they pronounce it, and was a very, very good meeting. Sad in some ways, happy in others. Sad because I think of maybe half the CEOs I met, they did not know who ICANN is. Of about 60-70% of the CEOs I met, they did not think internet governance is a major issue. But the other 40% that understood what internet governance is, they actually thought it's a very urgent issue. So it wasn't like the others felt, who cares? At one particular lunch where they had the 40 CEOs of the largest companies in the technology area in the planet, including some of the regulators, so Neelie Kroes was there, John Liebowitz, the FTC chairman, was there. It was actually quite an impressive lineup. I had the pleasure of sitting at the table with John Chambers, and we were chatting about it. And he asked me to stand up and tell these IT leaders that while all of them are sitting in Davos discussing how much money they'll make off the internet, that some of the core internet governance issues and internet politics could actually undermine a lot of their plans. So I had a very good intervention that lasted good 15 minutes, and John was egging me on to talk to them, in which I explained to them the rising concerns about the openness and the fluidity of the Internet for the world. And I likened it to an example of a friend of mine who has a house here near the beach, and he spent the last year remodeling his house. Beautiful new floors, beautiful everything. And after that, all of that, about 2 months ago, his wife, who's a physician, a doctor, told him, there's a smell in the house. And he says, well, it's everything is new. Of course there's a smell. He said, no, there is a smell. It's not right. And he didn't believe her, of course, until 2 days later. He was walking down the main hallway of the house, and he saw all the wood panels popping up. So he goes, as you know, California homes are wood homes, and there is a place underneath the house you can go. He went under the house and opened the main door, and a massive sauna coming at him. And when he put some lights on, he found out that the entire underbelly of his house was rotten. And when he asked, when he brought experts to find out why, turned out he had a pinhole in a hot pipe for 6 months. Pinhole. And that pinhole caused the entire underbelly of the house to be completely rotten, and they had to redo the whole house from scratch. They almost had to take the house down. And I used that example, and John loved it, and actually reused it the next day at a meeting he was having, as did Neelie Kroes, to say that it may be a pinhole in Internet governance. Internet governance may be a pinhole for most of these executives who are making tens of billions of dollars on the Internet. But it's a pinhole that could ruin their party. And if they don't pay attention, and I explained to them what happened at the Wicket, for example, in Dubai, at the urging of my good friend Marilyn, who's been telling me we should talk more about that, most of them did not understand how close they got to having the Internet balkanized. They just could not fathom how close it was. We were literally a, quote, let me check the temperature of the room, unquote, away from Article 3.8 being in a treaty that would have made everything we do at ICANN in the hands of the ITU. We were literally a, if the chairman just asked people, hey, what do you think about that? And they had raised their hands, as he did on another part of the treaty, we'd be done. Frankly, I wouldn't be meeting with you. I'll be meeting with a lot of international lawyers now to figure out how can we actually really function in that new world. So this is pretty serious, and you should know that not just ICANN, but all the good people of ISOC, of ICANN, of the RIRs, of the people who understand the value of plugging these pinholes before they ruin our house, have been actively at work to ensure that the Internet remains free and open. So I used Davos not, frankly, to just shake hands, because many of these people would respond to the president of ICANN and meet us, but it was an opportunity to raise Internet governance to a new level and to really allow people to understand that they cannot just take it for granted, which they do today. So we just finished a survey in which it's now clear to us that most people view a lot of what we do as utilitarian. It should be there. You never ask. It should work. But they don't know that there are forces behind change. Many of you may have seen a remarkable article in The Economist 2 weeks ago about Internet politics. Remarkable in the sense that The Economist doesn't easily do a 5-6-piece spread about the subject. There's usually something that is spawning that. And of course, Dubai was part of it, the Wicket. But also, I was so glad that they made it clear to all of us that the next year and a half are equally dangerous. And if you haven't seen the business constituencies graph that I use to remind myself what's still coming? What's still coming is still dangerous. We have the WTPF and the WSIS and various activities that are trying to prove to the world that the multi-stakeholder model is defunct, that it does not work. And if they decide that Tunis's agenda is dead, we have major problems ahead of us, major serious problems ahead of us. So That's what was on my mind in Davos. Of course, I used the opportunity to do a few things. I can share them with you. We have mishandled our relationship with the South African government as it relates to the ICANN meeting there in Durban. I didn't know that till I arrived, and the Minister of Telecommunications of South Africa nearly decked me, was very upset with ICANN. I had no idea. Then I checked, and I found out that when we set that up, wasn't set up properly, whenever it was, a year ago. So I repaired my relationship with her, and I spent very valuable time with her. And the first phone call I got on Monday morning when I arrived to my office here was from the equivalent of the BBC of South Africa, already calling me and saying they want to cover our full meeting. So this is why we use these meetings, and I want to be clear with you. Davos is a pain in the neck. It's not a comfortable place to go. It's very crowded. It's really terrible. There's nothing fancy about Davos. But it's a place for us to do our homework and to meet people and to expand. I also got a chance to invite the three CEOs of the three largest telecom companies in the Middle East. So Etisalat, Saudi Telecom, and Qtel. All three have personally agreed to attend the ICANN meeting there on March 5th. So this is why we do these meetings, right? So we can raise the profile of ICANN. So on another note, I want to share with you that I've kicked off also this year a series of activities to raise the profile of the DNS sector. The profile of the DNS sector right now does not look very good. We have commissioned ECHO, the leading global reputation analysis company, to do a reputation analysis on the DNS sector. The results are not good. We have a negative perception that is 4x, four times worse than the average of the entire technology sector. This is based on, ECHO is a, you can look them up, they're a superb reputational analysis company. They do it for every major Fortune top company in the world. And I was very clearly displeased with the results. We also commissioned the Hill & Knowlton Strategies to do a study on how the analyst market perceives us. And you know, the analyst market, for those of us who have built businesses or have built industries, are very critical players. They are very critical players because they set the tone. So when you call the Wall Street Journal or the Financial Times and you say, we the DNS sector or we ICANN or whatever, the first thing they say is, who can I call at Gartner to check? Or they might go to IDC and say, did IDC did a study on the sector and what do they think about it? Or they may call Forrester in some cases, although Forrester is more marketing-oriented than market-building. So we commissioned HNK to go to all these analysts and find what they think about our sector. Well, the first clear finding is that none of them follow our sector. That in itself is a failure. We need to change that. If we think we want people to follow our sector and comment on our sector, and we don't leave it to a few fringe people to always be commenting on our sector in the papers, I think we need to basically cultivate the analyst sector. So that's another finding we did. The third and last finding we did was to talk to people in the financial sector. We called people at Morgan. We called people at Citibank. And this all happened this year, by the way. I've been very busy with that because I'm very disappointed in the reputational analysis. And once again, the street does not care about our sector. They don't understand our sector. They have no idea how to size our sector. They view it as not sexy, as not growing. They don't have anybody really serious looking at our sector. They have some kids in the basement in New York who may once in a while look at VeriSign, and even then they look at it as part of a larger group that they don't belong to. So I picked up the phone and I called, of course, Jim Bezos, the CEO of VeriSign, and I chatted with him. I spoke to Lisa also at Neustar. I said, well, you know, you guys are public companies. What's going on here? And they said, well, we suffer from that too. You know, we do not have really the following. So if you add up this, how the financial sector's views, if you add up the how the media sector views us, and if you add up our reputation issues, all these things led me to believe that we have a unique opportunity to actually raise the profile of our sector quickly. Now, I will balance all of that, which sounds like business chatter, with another piece of information. The pinhole underneath the ICANN house is the fact that we do not have a well-structured set of agreements to manage this market. This is something that will come to bite us, is biting us, and will continue to bite us sooner or later. So if you balance the two things, raising the value of our sector with strengthening the business framework of our sector, that this sector looks mature. And given the fact we're about to face hundreds, thousands potentially of new players in this market, the timing is now for us to address these two things and address them very well. So to do this, I have started a series of CEO roundtables, of which I hope this will be a good input as well, in which I'm listening to the leaders of the sector and trying to understand from them how are we going to do these things. The first CEO roundtable was held on January 17th. It was in this room. And we had, this one was focused on registrars. And we had the 10 leading registrars in the world represented by their CEOs. Footnote, this was the very first time these CEOs had ever been here. Footnote number two, this was the very first time these CEOs had ever gotten a call from the CEO of ICANN saying, hey, you're leaders in the sector, let's chat. Tremendous success. We had a superb day with them. We had the people who did the reputational analysis and the people who did the media analysis, all these guys come and present it to them. They heard it firsthand, and they agreed with it. And I invited them to give me input and to give me some call to action. We're doing the same thing again on the 4th of February here for the registry CEOs. So Hal and Jim Bezos from VeriSign and all the registry CEOs will be here again, and we'll spend a day with them to find out how we can do both things. Help them raise the profile of the sector and also change the business framework so that we have business frameworks that are mature and ready for the growth ahead. And they all have understood that this is my dual agenda. In other words, we'll fix their balance sheet, but we need to first help them do the right things. I'll give you examples of some of the things we discussed with them. We have bad actors in this sector. Every sector has bad actors. Unfortunately, our bad actors are very visible and very written about. But we also have excellent good actors. They're not written about. So one of the things we discussed is, well, how do we help the market know the good actors from the bad actors? One simple way that I know I've seen done, in fact, I participated in doing during the 90s in the PC industry, is to create something like a good housekeeping seal. That says, this is a good registrar. This is a bad registrar. And who does the seal? The industry does the seal. This should be self-induced by the industry. The leaders of the industry should sit together and say, what is a good registry? What is a good registrar? And award these people the right awards. We discussed things like doing a yearly DNS industry conference, where the people in this industry and the people outside this industry who want to meet the industry can come together and actually meet the industry and see it in a good way, in a good light, as a serious industry. We discuss increasing their level of responsibility about the people who participate in this industry. So for the first time, I made it very clear that I intend to introduce a registrant's bill of rights, a statement that I can walk into John Leibowitz at FTC or walk into Neelie Kroes and Vivian Redding in Europe or any other government and say, this is a responsible industry. It actually has a set of rights and responsibilities that are published for the registrants. etc., etc. And we discussed a series of things like that. And I must tell you, I was very, very pleased, very impressed with the level of engagement by the CEOs, by the leaders. And we were lucky also because the new CEO of GoDaddy was there. So Blake showed up. And it was very good for him to see this firsthand, to understand the issues, to understand the complaints, to understand the reputational issues, and to participate with us at the very beginning of his tenure. This would have been his, you know, first week on the job, to actually understand that he of all CEOs, has a particular burden of leadership. And we'll be doing more of these roundtables, and I consider, again, yours today and in a few hours here next door with your colleagues to be the same types of roundtables, so I need to seek your guidance and input on these things, and I know many of you have expended a lot of hours and a lot of days and a lot of time thinking about these issues and trying to make them better. But I must be clear. We are not going to just do this as an exercise in verbal exchanges. So as soon as I'm done with the roundtables, we're going to get to work, and we're going to put some of these things to action. And I'm calling for a summit of all these leaders in late April before we go to Beijing, at which point we plan to roll out some of these things. There is no time. I cannot be rolling new GTLDs in the second half of this year before we have the foundations of a solid, mature industry that embraces its responsibilities and understands the importance of doing the right thing as well as elevating its value and its reputation and doing it through self-governance. Because the message that I got clearly when I was in D.C. at the FTC or when I was in Europe with their governments is that if we do not self-govern ourselves, they will govern us. It's that simple. And the history of industries is replete with examples of this. If industries do not rise and take their responsibilities, somebody will step in and tell them what to do. And so then they can't scream, and they can't run around and say, oh my God, that's what they're doing to us. Well, here's your opportunity. Show your responsibility. And again, as I said a minute ago, and I say again, I was delighted by the response of the CEO. Superbly supportive, very understanding, and very willing to engage with us at every level, in positive activities to raise the value, and in the responsibilities they need to take to shape up the sector. And this will help us, Steve, as I'm sure you know, this will help us in a lot of the discussions where we went back and forth with them and could never get through. Because suddenly, if you have a more responsible industry, a cadre of people, of leaders, who understand their responsibilities, and who understand that they need to take their own governance seriously, then frankly the debate takes a different shape. When we come and tell them there are IP issues, well, there are IP issues. And you as business leaders need to understand these. And what are you going to do about them? Right. So this is my intent here, is to raise the dialogue and the level of the discourse to a different level. And that's what we're doing. Again, many of these CEOs never called, never engaged in ICANN before. Never. A little bit on the internal stuff at ICANN. I shared with you a full plan in Toronto. The plan is on track. We said we will do a report on in Beijing. I can just give you an interim report. Things are going as planned. To go faster, yes, I'm a very impatient man. But so much we can do to move an organization that has, for a long time, in my opinion, been little managed. Organization that is highly managed. We do not have a lot of management structure at ICANN. A lot of excellent, brilliant individual contributors. We do not have a management structure. So, for example, as of Friday, we completed a three-month project to take every activity at ICANN, and to build it into a single project management portfolio management system. It was done Friday evening. 509 projects. It's the first time I have full visibility of what projects do we have, who owns them, where are they in their plan, when will they be done, what are the cross functions that are dependent on it? It's all in the system. Now, it'll take me another 3 months to clean it up, because effective Monday morning, my own staff meeting started with the dashboards of the system printed out in front of my team and discussing what worked, what didn't work, what is happening, what is not happening. It'll take us probably 3 months to get all of that cleaned up, and when it's all cleaned up, as I told my team and I told you in Toronto, I intend to expose that to you, because that's your projects, that's your money. You need to know what's happening at ICANN. You need to know where we're spending our time and money, and your money. So some of these things are already in motion. Building a deeper second middle management team is also on the move. We added 3 new VPs in the last 2 weeks. We do not have a middle management team. We do not have people who've managed a lot of people. We don't have many of them. We have a few, but not many. Understanding budgets, understanding how to deliver things. And then the last thing I'll tell you about, which pains me, but I will tell you, your community, your family here, we have a lot of work to change the culture at ICANN so that we become a culture that is less defensive and a culture that is more embracing the responsibilities and a culture that is more accountable to the things we tell the people we will do. Quite a bit of work. It's just not in our DNA. And I want to be clear, our people work harder than almost any people I met in all my startups or big companies I've been at. It's remarkable. I spend more time telling employees to stop and go home and take rest than in any company I've ever worked. And I'm not just telling you this. This is actually true and almost sad for me. That our people work too much and too hard. And they care too much. Now, I care as well, but I mean, that cannot happen at the expense of people starting to be so stretched. And I think a lot of that being stretched has to do with how well we manage people. So when I tell somebody, how busy, why are you so busy? What the heck are you doing? Well, until Friday, I got answers that simply sounded like there's just a lot on their plate. Well, now I can literally, when I meet with any employee, on my iPhone, I can even pull up what they're working on. And I can say, my goodness, you have 17 projects. Possible. I couldn't do that. Why do you have 17 projects? Well, you know, we met with this person. He gave me this. This person put me on a cross-functional team. I met with the community at that meeting. They asked me to do these 4 things. This board member called me, asked me to do these 3 things. And it adds up. Okay, and when will you get them done? Well, I'll go as fast as I can. That's not sustainable. It's just not sustainable. So not only are we putting the tools and the systems and the management discipline in place, we also, frankly, engaged in a pretty extensive cultural change initiative within ICANN that started actually yesterday morning so that we can help people embrace a new culture of accountability, of reasonableness in their scope, and we can start understanding how to support so they succeed. And finally, before I open it up, so I'm sure many of you have questions, or I also want to hear from you about what's going on with your community, I want to say 2 things. One is to clarify a comment I made in Amsterdam on Friday after Davos. I stopped in Amsterdam, and the press and some other people carried my comment and extrapolated it in ways that were not true. So I don't have time to go fix it. The public, but you're who matters, so I'm just going to explain it. I did say publicly that I believed the way the Trademark Clearinghouse activities happened, I had made a mistake. And people construed that to mean that I thought the whole thing was a mistake and we shouldn't have done it. And, you know, this. Let me clarify. I think, as I have told you, and I told some of you in person, I'm new to this process. Understand that I'm new to this process and that I have learned a lot to learn, and I still have a lot to learn. It'll be a while before I fully appreciate the world I'm in now. And as such, what I explained is that the way I went about solving what I thought was an issue in Toronto and I needed to do something about it, and I still believe is an issue. I don't believe that the claims or the things that you brought to my attention you know, are not right. Quite the opposite. I think they're very right. That's why I engaged. That's why I jumped on them. The mistake I did is that I did not fully appreciate the process and understand how the process should work. And so some people got very upset with me, and I have now a complaint with the ombudsperson who's spending 2 hours with me this afternoon with a complainant to discuss it. And that's fine. That's process, and I respect it deeply, and I'll be there for it. But I am not at all saying, and will not say, and in fact I'm in vehement agreement with many of you in this room, that we do have some issues, and they have to be solved. If we are a responsible industry, we have to face these issues and deal with them. If I made a mistake in how, that's fine. I'll fix that and get on with how. But I'm not shying away from the importance of the matters you brought to my attention and that I still believe need to be addressed. And in case you're wondering, I am loving this job. I'm enjoying it. It's the toughest job I've done. But I'm having a great time. I'm really liking it. I'm staying for now and continuing the effort with all my heart, with all my mind. It's too important. It's too important. So, anything I missed sharing with the community? I mean, there are lots of things we could tell you. But let's open it and make sure you have your questions answered and anything you want to share with me about your work and what you hope to accomplish here and how I can be helpful, I'm here for that.
And we will take some questions from the remote participants, but first, I think, Marilyn?
Thank you, David, and thank you, Fadi, for being so candid with us and also taking the time to help us understand some progression of activities that I'm sure all of us are going to be both very excited about and also want to be very engaged in. I'd just like to comment on two things. One is the definition of what is the DNS sector is, I think, very important to the business community. And it is not, in my mind, limited to just the suppliers.
Mm.
So I'm very happy with the range of things you're talking about, but I want to put on the table a concept that, after all, the things that ICANN does,
yes,
affect and leverage online commerce,
yes,
and online services.
Yep.
And I think, looking at it from a business perspective, just to use an analogy from years ago in the narrowband days when Stiglitz was the economist at the Department of Commerce, and Mark Dadd was the chief of AT&T, and they did a joint analysis of how the internet and online and e-commerce were driving GDP growth in other industry sectors, and understanding that the impact of decisions on what at the time looked like a narrow set of players was actually very profound to economic growth. So when you look at, and perhaps it's something we can talk more about ourselves, but when you look at the reputational issues and the idea of having CEO engagement and an understanding of the implications, I think I would just say from the business constituency point of view that we have got to also have interactions and understanding from those other markets that you mentioned earlier, but that are being driven by decisions that affect contracted parties. The supplier part of ICANN's job is a critical part, but to me, you know, there's so much more to the role that ICANN plays in a healthy, vibrant internet than just domain names and IP addresses. AS numbers, right? So, you know, very happy to hear everything you've said, but just want to broaden the concept, and it's more for us to think about as well. What about the rest of the online business and the users of the online world, which are also going to be affected by some of these other on the idea of self-governance? Some of us have been involved in helping to create some of those self-governance models. And I will just say also more for us to talk about maybe how do we make sure that the self-governance also embraces the voice of the and involvement of the registrants and the users and civil society and not just the suppliers devising mechanisms that aren't not as well-rounded.
Yes.
My final comment has to do with thanking you for spending the time at the ITU World Conference on International Telecommunications and to reinforce everything that you said. There are other people here who were also there, Tony and Jensen and others. The risk of internet governance changing, not just ICANN, but also the businesses that people are here advising or representing, I think is very profound.
Yes.
And I hope that we'll continue, that you and your team will actually draw on the expertise broadly from CSG companies who are very often meeting with those governments on a daily basis, working with the IGOs, and helping to influence the understanding. And
very good.
Yes, they are. That was Marilyn Cade. If you would please identify yourself so that people who are listening remotely know that for sure. Can we go to maybe a question online? Would someone participating online like to ask a question or make a comment? Okay, we'll go back to the room here. Steve Metellus.
Yes, Steve Metellus. Thank you. And thank you, Fadi, for the, that presentation. And I echo some of what Marilyn would say. And I guess the way I would sum it up is I'm not sure I understand your definition of the DNS sector. So that really, I think, needs to be clarified. But I also appreciate your clarifying what you said in Amsterdam. As you can imagine, that report raised a lot of concern. I think you helped to rest. But I think the larger question that we that has kind of drawn us into is this whole implementation versus policy issue, and really boils down to is the brokenness of our policy development process, the extent to which we need to find other ways to deal with questions that may be important but are not necessarily policy questions. Do you think we need now to totally redesign that system for both developing policy and for carrying out implementation, or do you think we can work within the framework that we've got? Because the sense, I think, the discussion growing out of the straw man solution, I think, has put this whole issue in focus. We have a very serious problem with policy. If have alternatives to the policy development process.
Yes, this one. So let me. There are two things really here on the table. Three things really that if I could just answer these, and then we can reopen it for. One is the definition of what is the sector and who is in that sector. The second one about the participation of all the people concerned in defining a true industry-wide registrant bill of rights. What that means. Who should be involved in defining that? And the third one is, as Steve said, the absolutely critical debate that resulted from my mistake to engage everyone on, you know, how do we do the right thing here before we release this program on policy versus implementation. So let me start with the definition of the sector. And this is obviously part of the exercise. Part of what we're doing is to figure out, okay, what is the definition of the sector? Because when we called, frankly, some people at Gartner, their first reaction is, what is the sector? Who is in the sector? What public companies are in the sector? How far do we go? What is the circle we build around it? For example, I mean, they asked us, does every company that provides hosting services and also provides access to DNS services, is it part of that sector? No. So they, frankly, were looking to us to put that little circle around what is the industry. Now, let me be parochial. From my perspective, what I want to do now and urgently and in the short term, more than anything else, is to get the people who are contracted with IT to really live within their responsibilities. Because in my opinion, as someone who's written and signed lots of contracts over the last 35 years, we do not have a healthy, structured legal framework for all these players to participate in the ICANN effort. I mean, it's just not there. There are pieces of it. We have people signing different agreements. We have no mechanism to go right now, for example, and tell most registrars that they need to sign the new registrar agreement. I don't even have that mechanism. Meanwhile, I'm the one who will get called to Washington to explain why the hell something didn't happen. But I can't tell a registrar to sign a new agreement. I find this remarkable. So I think I'll be parochial and direct. A lot of my effort here was to bring the people who have a direct responsibility to the distribution, to the value chain of DNS, to actually really raise their profile, because the reputational study we did focused on three words: registry, registrar, and new GTLD. That's how we did the reputational analysis, right? So it's really about them, about these guys. Now, having said that, I think both Steve and Marilyn are correct that if I use the term DNS sector, it includes a lot more than just the registries and the registrars and the resellers. And maybe we should, as part of that effort, get back from you. Maybe we call them the DNS industry and we call the bigger thing the DNS sector, which includes a lot more people who get affected by the DNS. This is almost like the Internet. What is the Internet industry versus the Internet sector? I mean, there are now companies in Davos that are in healthcare who claim they're in the Internet sector. Most of our business is moving on the Internet, right? There are media companies who said, we don't even have a print paper anymore. Newsweek. Is Newsweek in the media side or is really in the Internet? Is it an Internet company now? So I think these lines are getting blurrier, and we will agree as part of this effort on a set of definitions. So I accept your input as very valuable, and I'll be careful, and maybe we do come up with a different label that describes those who are contracted and therefore are in the distribution chain of DNS, registries, registrars, resellers, etc., including some hosting companies, that versus the overall sector that is affected by the domain name system. So thank you for that input. I appreciate it, and I'm open to more of it. Please, let's comment on that before I go to the others. Steve and Dennis.
Steve Del Bianco, with NetChoice and the VC. And Fadi, what we end up doing here, what end up comes out of the process is only two things: registrations and resolutions.
Yeah.
That's it. And so I support your notion of a registrant bill of rights.
Yes.
And that might even include the right of a registrant to get notified about to register something that's been a subject of previous abuse, just to give them a heads up.
Correct.
And not just for 9 days. So a registrant bill of rights, great idea. But we're going to miss half, because half of what we do shows up as resolutions. Resolutions of domain names and email addresses. That's the way, our global internet users see us. So users need a bill of rights, too. We can't do just a registrant's bill of rights, or we'll miss the whole resolution side.
Mm.
Those are our customers, too. And when they look to ICANN and the DNS, they look at the DNS to give them availability and integrity of resolutions. Availability is 24/7, 365 in every script and language, whether I'm looking for a domain name or an email address. They need to work the same all over the planet. Here's where a balkanized internet is so troubling, is that it's going to work fine on my iPad here in Los Angeles, but if I travel to China, hardly any of this stuff's going to work anymore. That's a problem. We may not be able to solve it, but let's put it in the Bill of Rights. Another Bill of Rights is integrity. If I resolve a domain name, if I click on a link, I have a right to expect it. It's not going to be fraudulently.
Yes.
I have a right to expect it. It'll resolve properly all the way up the chain. And everybody on the right side of the table manages the resolutions without even being a contract party. All the ISPs. And I would close by saying that if you don't address the user bill of rights, we will miss, we'll miss a huge chunk of what the affirmation of commitments obligates us to do. The affirmation talks about global internet users and the global public interest. And that is as much users as it is registrants. So let's not leave that out.
So this is very well noted here. I really like that, and why we need this meeting. I did not think that as part of dealing with the value chain of registries and registrars. Let me think about this one, because I really like it. I just need to figure out the best way for us to do this as a community. But you're right, I don't want to miss the opportunity as we're raising the profile of our sector to at least address that. We may want to talk offline a little bit, Steve, just I could learn from you how we can address this properly. See, the Registrant Bill of Rights is unique in that there are some legal aspects to it that I want to make sure are part of the agreements with the registries and registrars. Now, I need you to work with me to find out if there are legal aspects to the user's Bill of Rights that also can rise to the level of putting them there. So let's talk about that. I like it a lot. But back to the Registrant's Bill of Rights, I want to say this. When you tell registries and registrars we need to do that, their first reaction, well, it's already there. It's in the agreement. In fact, if you go to our website, and in fact, you kind of search for that kind of term, something comes up that says, oh, in section 3.6 of the agreement with registries, there's that. In section 17.1, there's that. And if you add it all up, it kind of looks like a registrant's Bill of Rights. And they may be right. But they're missing the point that even if it is right, we do not have a truly nicely packaged thing with a ribbon that we can go to the world with and say, we believe in these things. We believe in these things. We're going to adhere to these rights of the people who come and trust us to actually do their work. So we are going to do this as follows. I first asked my team to put together, based on some research, a straw man, a blueprint of a registrant's Bill of Rights. They did that. I'm about to review it, actually, this weekend for the first time. They just finished it. They looked at some of the CCTLDs and other entities that have already done something like this. So I'm putting that together. And then I plan to review it with some of the CEO roundtables, just share it. So in the next one, on February 4th, I plan to share it. So in the next few weeks, we plan to just clean it up, review it, make sure it meets my smell test of something that is complete. Then I plan to share it with the whole community for all of us to look at and give me input on it. That should happen really no later than Beijing, if not before Beijing. So hopefully at that time we have a chance to all give us input. And I know, you know, Steve, this will be very contested and people will have an opinion, but that's okay. I mean, that's fine. If anything, we're raising, all I'm doing at this stage is getting the CEOs to say, this is important. They don't know the details of what's in it. But when their people start saying, no, we're going to fight over this word and this apostrophe and that letter, I want to call back the CEOs and say, look, guys, we either raise all of us to the level of accepting that it's not going to be what everyone wants, but it will be strong enough that we can all stand behind it and not blush when somebody says, do you as an industry have a set of responsibilities towards the people that you take money from? Like us
is
to
it possible to get in a question from a comment from online?
Sure. Just a minute. We have
yes.
One more hand here and then you go. But I'll just close on this, that yes, we intend to get it done in the next few weeks with some tough discussions with the leaders. Then I'll put it out for everyone to give me feedback and comments into, and then we plan to contract it. So, Jimson next, and then the person online.
Thank you very much.
And this is Jimson Olufuye. Please, Jimson, go ahead.
Africa Alliance, Nigeria. Just following up from the definitional issue,
yes.
Very important, especially regarding the outreach, you know, strategy that Ekan has outlined.
Yes.
So, for example, in Africa, you don't miss out on the important clear in the ICT ecosystem.
Yes.
And particularly internet governance ecosystem.
Yes.
And I commend the initiatives you're working there in that regard.
Yeah.
And also, really say that there is need to carry everybody along, and that is very important.
Yes.
And this to also say thank you very much. We had a good meeting in Dubai. I had the privilege of meeting with you, the Nigerian delegation.
Yes.
And we discussed a lot of things.
Yes.
And there is a gap, though. We got to follow up.
Yes.
In the Nigerian representation, concerning Nigerian representation in GAC, for example, the person that was there was retired.
The person you mentioned, yes, when you were in Dubai. Yes.
Talk about that. So, and the head of delegation is interested in the replacement, how to do the replacement. So
yes.
The structural mechanism you're talking about,
yes,
you need to look at it seriously. The Nigerian government wants a letter,
yes,
from ICANN making that request that, well, your representative is no longer here, and there's need for replacement to be appointed.
Yes.
So the head of Nigerian delegation to WIKI very much interested in engaging with ICANN, and they need that.
Excellent. Okay, we'll take care of that. That's very good. And I had lunch with the Minister of Telecommunications of Nigeria.
Okay.
I had lunch with her earlier this week.
Okay,
she was in Davos. Yeah, we had a great time, and her husband was with her. We had a nice lunch.
Mm.
Yeah, and I did share with her that I met with your delegation, and she was very pleased and asked me to come to Nigeria and meet with her and spend some time there. So I will try while we're in Durban on the way down to actually visit her. So I'll talk to you offline about that.
Okay.
But the letter to your representative at the WICCAT will go. And I didn't know that they're expecting a letter from us, but we'll take care of it right away. And again, unfortunately, what takes time with this is that I don't, quote-unquote, run the GAC. And there's a very specific protocol about my engagement with the government committee. So David will work through their people, and but we took note of it.
And lastly, to ask the question with regard to the outcome of the WIKI.
Yes.
I'm quite interested in how ICANN has prepared to engage ITU.
Yes.
You know about the rollout.
Yes.
This rollout part of the Dubai engagement, but specifically, what is ICANN's strategy in engaging ITU? Because we do know ITU is quite aggressive.
Right.
They're ready.
Yes.
So we need to really work smart and prepared. So
I owe you an answer on both the outreach in Africa and the ITU, and I still haven't answered the one question earlier about policy versus implementation. I'm keeping track. But let's just hear the person online so we give them a chance to speak. Please, go ahead.
Fadi, thank you. This is Ellen Shankman. I'm calling in from Israel.
Thank you.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Fadi. Thank you so much. First of all, Fadi, thank you so much for your presentation and what you've gone through and all the efforts you're making. They really are very well appreciated and received. And to the extent that it may be helpful for you in developing the User's Bill of Rights, I'm sure you may be aware of, and if not, I think you may find language that may be very helpful for you there. ISOC, the Internet Society, has recently, at the end of, on the 26th of November, released the results of a longstanding survey that they conducted for Internet users in 20 countries, highlighting what people's views are about the role of their expectations on the Internet, on its impact in lives of society, concerns over censorship, excessive government controls, and the roles of what should be, you know, basic human rights on the Internet. And so you may find some language in that study that may help support you in the development on the Bill of Rights that you're trying to draft. So that's one suggestion. And the other is, I'd like to support what the Steves and Marilyn have said about, I agree with you totally that it's incredibly important for us to be able to show that we are responsible and trying to self-regulate this industry to see, and that's why the suggestions being made by the intellectual property constituency together with the business constituency, whether in the strawman proposal or the other rights protection mechanisms, and again in the discussion of policy versus implementation, is that they are all a serious attempt at self-regulation and coming up with responsibility and not merely a battle of a second bite at an apple that's already been discussed. So I wanted to put that in as well.
Yeah. I must comment on this. First of all, thank you, Alan, and we will definitely, besides some input from Steve, I will direct my team to think about ISOC's work, and I work very closely with Lynn, who was also in Davos, to make sure that we rely on their work to understand how to create the user's Bill of Rights. And the reason I'm saying I need to talk about this further with Steve is because I think with the user's Bill of Rights, there's also the opportunity to do something with our fellow Internet organizations. So this is maybe an area where I'm going to Singapore shortly to meet with all the CEOs of the other Internet organizations. I will talk to them about maybe something we could do together, ISOC, the RRs, et cetera, on that. But back to then a couple of points. I'll climb back up the things that were put on the table. First, on the ITU. So there's a personal level and there is an institutional level of dialogue. On the personal level, I have built a rapport now with Dr. Touré. In fact, my wife and I had dinner with his wife and him recently. So I can connect with him and talk to him and understand what's rolling in his head as best I can about the ITU. And Dr. Touré and I in Dubai had a pretty tough pact. A pact of engagement that is fraught with difficulty. It's not easy. But we did have a good pact, and we agreed to work together towards better dialogue. We agreed that many of the issues his constituents have need to be addressed. Whether in a treaty or not, we may disagree, but they need to be addressed. In the area of development, we have an institutional connection with them. So, for example, we're about to start a series of events around the planet, and these have not been announced, so I hope we're not tweeting this out today, but we will be doing a series of events around the planet called MIG, Multi-Stakeholder Internet Governance. We're dubbing them MIG Works, Multi-Stakeholder Internet Governance Works. The first MIG Works will be in the Arab region, and the second one will be in Africa, in Addis Ababa. We're doing both of these in the month of March, by the way. Doing these not as ICANN, but with the rest of our fellow organizations. So ISOC is involved, the RIRs are involved, all of these organizations are involved with us in this effort. This is not an effort to talk to governments. This is an effort to talk to the multi-stakeholders in this region and to tell them two things, that multi-stakeholderism works, and that's how it works, and secondly, to engage them in participating in the multi-stakeholder environment. Right? So these are two very important things we're doing with these events. The first event, which will be on the 5th of March in Dubai, we'll have just about every head of telecommunications regulation agency in the Arab world, every many ministers of telecommunications. It will have the CEOs of many of the large telecommunications companies. It will have civil society. It will have academics. It will have inviting people from across the board to a two-day event. This event, we have now reached agreement with the IGF that the IGF will host it. So it will be an IGF, an Internet Governance Forum United Nations event. And we are partnering with various companies and various players like UNESCO and others to actually help us. The second one will be in Addis Ababa, and that one, back to you, Jimson, will be actually in partnership with the African Telecommunication Union. So we're showing Dr. Touré, we're showing Africa that we have nothing against the ITU or the ATU. We actually think we should be partners, especially in enabling the African people to stand up and to own that market and make it a great power of growth. We're committed to that. I am very committed to that. But this cannot be an ICANN alone effort. It cannot do this on its own. So we are very engaged. I must tell you, there is a lot going on, actually, that we are doing calmly, we're doing smartly, we're doing with the right partners. And this event, which will be called MIGWORKS, will be actually a caravan show across the world. So we plan to do it 4 times in Africa. We plan to do it in South America. We plan to do it all over the world, in Asia. And that's why I'm heading a major Asian tour in mid-February. I'm going to visit Tokyo. I'm going to visit Seoul. I'm going to visit Singapore. I'll visit New Delhi. I'm visiting all the major capitals, meeting with our stakeholders to make sure that they know we're committed to Asia. And we are, as you saw in The Economist in December, we're hiring a very senior VP of Asia very shortly that will actually be responsible for all of our Asian efforts in that region. So that's just to touch a little bit on ITU and outreach. There's a lot going on in that area. I won't take more time on this unless there are specific questions. I want to go back to the only other thing still on my agenda here, and that's policy versus implementation. I must tell you, the biggest outcome of the TMCH, of the trademark activities that I did here and in Brussels, which I did, frankly, with the clearest of conscience, was the fact that there is clearly no clarity on this matter. It just became so starkly clear to me that we are at complete different, you know, in different planets when it comes to what is policy and what is implementation. On one particular day, I can't remember now, Steve, is this one of the meetings you attended, the one here in L.A. I mean, my goodness, I mean, we had people that, we were pointing at an apple, and one person was thinking it's an orange, and the other was saying it's a peach. And then it was an apple, and no one could agree. It was remarkable. So one of the outcomes of that is that I asked David's team to go and think about this. And frankly, they thought about it. They issued this short paper recently, which is getting some input now from the community. And whilst the paper, in my opinion, was a well-written paper by Marika, and she really did a good job in at least laying out the issue, I don't think we still have community agreement on that. This is a pretty thorny issue. And whether the outcome, I think we're still getting comments on that paper.
That's right.
We're still in the open, and I'm waiting to see all the comments. This is very important. If you have not seen that paper and have not commented on it, please, I need all the comments I can get on this paper. This is Marika's paper on policy versus implementation, because the more I understand how you view what she said, the more I can start shaping the debate. This, Steve, is the kind of debate we should be having and having now. You know, this is a big pinhole under the building, and we can keep ignoring it and dealing with the wood popping on the first floor and nailing it down, but that's not going to solve the issue. We have got to go down to that pinhole and address it, and we have to do it as a community, and this is not going to be an easy one. But you know what? I think the best, smartest people on the planet who can solve this are here. So we should just deal with it and stop dancing around it and throwing more things at the house and wood is popping and nobody wants to go underneath to find where the pinhole is. The pinhole is that we do not have mechanisms to get things done on different tracks and an understanding when they go on each track. So everything gets shoved through one process. And we know this is a recipe for the sometimes the frustration that I felt when I first met many of you in this room. Deep frustration with ICANN, deep frustration with our processes, deep frustration with how policy is made. Almost incredulous people, you know, many of you in this room that I recognize, told me how crazy this is. So I'm there. I just think when I attempted to address it using common sense, I quickly understood that that's my common sense. I need to get the community's common sense. So that was my learning lesson, and I admitted that mistake. But that doesn't make the problem go away. We have a problem. So as soon when does the comment period end on this? Do you recall?
Well, we've asked for comments. We hope to have a session in Beijing to bring representatives together and talk about it further. So we haven't really put a deadline on those comments, though we can surely encourage that to happen.
It's not up for public comment. It's simply within GNSO.
That's right. It's a discussion. No, it was sent to all the SOs and the ACs, asked to spread it around to their community and for comments.
It might help to formalize that comment period.
And put a deadline. Yeah, I think, David, we might want to do that because this is not like any other policy or item. This is existential. This actually says, are we in a place where we can confidently tell the world we have a machine that works or not. So I confirm, first of all, I think the paper is well written and actually lays out the issues and provides at least a straw man of a solution. But I need to hear from all of you. I am following this personally, and let's indeed put a timeline, and let's make Beijing, rather than give us more comments, let's make Beijing hopefully a chance to start to face into the issue, to lean into the issue together and have substantive debate, and then out of that hopefully some good outcomes. Is that okay with you, David?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Please identify yourself. Thank you for the online. Thank you.
Quite a question. Following up on what you just said and one of the very interesting comments that rattles around in my mind that was made by Akram this morning while we were enjoying our breakfast is the challenge that faces all of us, and ICANN in particular, in terms of building consensus as our community becomes larger.
Yeah.
These sorts of ideas that you've discussed this morning, you've already identified the challenges in building consensus within the existing community, let's say, and with our community about to grow. It would be interesting to hear your views on this, what you see as the path forward for building consensus on such issues as implementation, on open comment periods in which we're about to have a greater number of comments received, how those will be addressed by ICANN, whether ICANN has the resources to consider each of those in a serious fashion, and really, truly how we move forward.
Yeah. This is a very good question, Heather, and one that torments me a little bit. Let me tell you something. If we do not figure out how we're going to listen to the growing community, because, again, ignore for a moment all the new people coming to the community due to the new GTLD program, but think about what is going to happen when all of our engagement efforts around the planet start bearing fruit. Right? Here we have just one comment from Jimson. We met you in Dubai. We lost our GAC representative. We need an effort from ICANN to get this seat refilled, and he's right. Multiply that by the hundreds of things that are about to pop on us as a result of not just the new GTLD program, but because we're finally engaging. We're really going out and hiring people. Pierre Dangenoux was just hired as VP of Africa. He's not sitting. He's going around. He's meeting people. He's bringing governments into the fold. I went to Dubai in one day. I met with 3 country delegations. That day I met with yours. And all of them are now wanting to get engaged with us in different ways. So we're going to see a sea change in the constitution and the breadth of the people coming to the ICANN community. I guarantee you, it's coming. A year from today, we will meet again. It will be a different community. Guaranteed. So, 2 things torment me. The first, and you brought both up. The first one is, are we going to be able to sustain all of that? Are we prepared to sustain all of that? Today, if this happens, we will crumble. We will just absolutely crumble. Let me give you a very simple thing. I've built many companies. 101. If somebody needs to reach the company, who do they call? If somebody needs to reach ICANN, who do they call today? Well, they call a lot of people. because there is just no mechanism to call ICANN, really. So you call, oh, I know Fadi and I know Chris and I'll, maybe this person will help me, or I'll call Steve and Steve will call somebody because Steve knows people. This is not sustainable. So we're rolling out the CRM system. We're rolling out the global support function. So there will be a 1-800-ICANN-HELP. So I have an entry point, and my call will be logged into a CRM system, and somebody will have to get back to me, and I'll be able to look at a dashboard, see how fast we're getting back to our constituents. So tools, processes, and people, which are the foundations of building an organization, are missing here. So we are building these as fast as humanly possible. And it's proving to be, we're moving. But okay, I have a clock. This is why when in Amsterdam, I made the comment, listen, if it were up to me, I'd delay the whole GTLD program by a year. I wanted to say 5 years, but of course, I didn't real hard for that to happen. But I said a year, and there were people almost standing on the tables. I mean, it was a shocking moment for them.
They weren't cheering.
No, they were about to kill me. And, it's remarkable that they're even surprised by that statement. It tells you that they're just, either they're living in startup mode where everything is rosy and beautiful and ICANN will deliver the impossible in 3 months, or they just want to believe that, we'll get it done. And I keep reminding them, it took you 6 years to put that guidebook, and in 6 months, you want me to get this whole program up and running perfectly. It doesn't work. And one of them stands up and says, you know what, why don't you do it the way I'm sure you've done it at IBM? Tell us the worst case analysis, and then every time you do something well, you shave time off of it. I said, well, I'm prepared to do that right now. It'll be in 3 years. That's what I did at IBM. How long will it take? It'll be 3 years, sir. That's why IBM's always on time. Because we just put the stretch, the goal, and of course this wasn't done like this. We had all kinds of expensive people building beautiful charts, and we told the customer, here it is, can't be done in any less time. And of course, we shaved time as we went, and we always looked like heroes. I asked the community, would you like me to do this? I'm happy to do this, then you're all happy, and I always meet my deadlines. Or would you rather I go at this like a startup does, because I have no choice? And why don't I have a choice? Good question. I ask myself that. Why don't I have a choice? Because I sincerely believe that if the new GTLD program is rolled out properly, it will be good for the consumer. It took me a while to get there. But I actually now, I'm a believer that if we roll it out properly and we take care of the things that need to be taken care of, it will end up being good for consumers. I learned it the hard way. I have my mom is 87, and many of you know that by now because she came up quite a bit in the trademark discussion. And I gave her an iPad when she was 85. She had never used a typewriter in her long life, but she's now an avid user of the. So she begged me this Christmas to get one for her sister. Her sister is much younger. She's 82, and she lives in Egypt. She doesn't speak English. So I gave her the iPad, and of course the iPad has this nice feature where you can switch it with literally a button into another language. So it's all in Arabic now. Problem is she can't spell English. She can't even spell .com in English. So there is a value in us releasing .com in Arabic, even if it's VeriSign. And everybody says, oh, you're helping VeriSign. I don't care if it's VeriSign. I'm helping a user. A user will get to be able to spell their full website name in their script. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. No wonder Russia has 800,000 new domains all in Cyrillic. For a reason. Because it makes it easy for people. So I'm convinced the new GTLD program is a good thing, and I don't want to delay it just so that I meet my deadlines. But at the same time, I was addressing you saying, don't get on my case every time I miss a deadline because I'm dealing with this like a startup mode.
Buddy, I think you were addressing part of the community.
Yes.
That's her response you would get in this
one. It'll be different. Here, you tell me, wait, do it right.
I mean, we would say we agree with you. If it's rolled out properly,
yes,
it could be very possible. Yes. But on the current timetable, the chances that it will be rolled out properly.
There will be I agree with you. So this is the balance, frankly, that I'm trying to find. And you're spot on. This was Steve speaking, for those of you on the phone, and he's right on. That while these guys and the people who are not in the room are the people Steve is worried about. It's the users. So I'm thinking also of the users. I'm not just thinking of the registries and registrars. I'm thinking, is this good? Yes, but it has to be done right. Are we going to make a few mistakes? Yes. But it can't be at the expense of messing up this whole DNS sector and all the people who use it. I'm there. So I'll go back to you. If I haven't scared you enough, Heather, you should be by now quite scared, that I'm very worried about the onslaught on us. But I am equally active in trying to put tools, people, and processes in place so we can get this right. And I will tell you, these were not there 3 months ago. There were no tools, people, and processes. There was a lot of good people with goodwill who will take your phone call anytime, but that doesn't scale. The second thing you brought up, which is much more profound, is consensus. And this is, you know, this is since Socrates' time, been fleeting people, you know, how to create consensus. How to create consensus when you have a lot more people around the table. Both my boys are out of the house now, so my wife and I can reach consensus on things a lot faster. Sit around the dinner table with she and I, we can make a decision. When our adult boys were still in the house a few months ago, it was harder. You know, they have opinions. So as our family grows and we have more people around the table, is consensus philosophically feasible? This is an excellent debate. And it's one that I think has been settled in a way, even if it's very difficult. But consensus is the way community works. And it's all but sacred. It's the way we have to do it. I think what will happen is we're going to take a lot longer to get certain things, just like it takes longer with my two boys to get to an answer. It will take a lot harder effort. It will mean that our team and many members of the community have to be better facilitators. They have to be people who know how to facilitate a debate between more consensus parties. We can't just throw it at the table and sit back. So I told my team, you need to learn to facilitate a discussion because we now have a lot more people at the table. But consensus is the rule. It's the way it should work. And on this, I'm going to get philosophical on you and tell you, in my opinion, one of the reasons I wake up every day after 4 hours of sleep every day now for the last 4 months and continue doing this is that I believe we have an opportunity here at ICANN to actually show the world a way to govern a common resource, by consensus. And the world is failing at that. Look at air management discussions at the level of the UN. It's an utter failure. And that's the only other resource like ours that is borderless and vital. And they don't even have the economic power we have. So ours is much harder. Ours affect economic interests in a major way for a lot of people. So how are we going to govern this? The world is watching us. The world is watching if we can go from the model of the last 12 years of ICANN, which was a smaller community, to a new model where not only we have new GTLD, but we have the world at our doorstep now saying, this is important. We heard it in Dubai. Country after country said, this is too important. We're all over this. The 40% of the people I met in Davos who said internet governance is important, they said it's extremely important. It's just that the other 60 don't know. I met with the vice chairman of Akamai, and after I spent 20 minutes with him, he says, oh my God, you need to come meet George, the chairman of Akamai, ASAP. This is too important for us. So as soon as the word comes out, and you see it when people like The Economist start writing about this, geopolitically what we do will be very important. So with all of this on us, we have to somehow maintain or figure out how to do consensus better. Part of what Steve is bringing up, we need to do policy versus implementation decisions and get a policy process that works better. If we don't, the world will overwhelm us, and frankly, we will be left behind. This is now existential. We cannot continue like this. We cannot continue barely with the current. Imagine when we add all these new people coming to the table and saying, frankly, are you nuts? I have to wait 3 years for this PDP to go through. It's not feasible. I mean, Vivian Redding and Neelie Kroes, the two EU vice presidents that look after our area, said in Davos, they said, we're coming to the painful conclusion that on most issues, regulation cannot keep up with the speed of the internet. That's quite a statement from these two ladies that have a lot of power in Europe and in the world, by the way. And so, can we move at the speed of the internet? Or are we going to be left behind? I'm worried about it. But I do believe, on a positive note, that the right people to solve this issue are in the room. I'm convinced of that. I had my doubts when I started about some people, but frankly, the more I get to know you, the more I get to work with you, you all care, you all are thoughtful people, you're here for a reason, you want to make it work, and frankly, if we can't make it work, I don't know who will make it work. Then what, we go hand it to the ITU and say, you make it work? It's not going to work. So I'm sorry if I depressed you, I didn't mean to, I just meant to be positive, but your question was very deep, very important.
We have time for one last question.
Tony.
Yes, Tony Holmes. A couple of things to go back on, if I may.
Please.
But firstly, I'm very glad to hear that you're staying. Now you clearly understand how you mentioned the round tables that have taken place, and
yes.
I certainly think there's an awful lot to come from that. I also think that's an area that could be expanded into other sectors, as Marilyn said.
Yeah.
And certainly, from our perspective, ISPs, connectivity providers, it would be a great benefit if an event that included business and those elements could be undertaken along similar lines. It would help us in many ways. It would not only help us in ICANN, it would help us engage and get those people focused on things like internet governance very much as well.
I like that idea.
That has been.
Can you help me with that, Tony?
That was the offer I was going to make.
Okay, then your offer is accepted. I'm doing one for the CCTLD's CEOs in London on March 13th. We can pair it with that if you want.
Okay.
Happy to do it. And then at the end of these roundtables, I'm doing a summit of all the leaders, and that's planned in New York. So, and that will be in April, date to be announced shortly. But if you, I'm very happy with your proposal. I think it's a good one, and it's a miss on my part. I should have thought about this. Let's do one roundtable. That's a whole day affair because we will bring then the team that will describe the reputational analysis, describe. We did a very good even analysis of the market and its size because we couldn't find anybody on Wall Street who did it, so we got someone to do it with some very interesting predictions of the size of the DNS sector for the next few years. We also did a clear analysis of our areas of responsibility that have been missing and how we should... So we could repeat the whole program for your constituency, and if London is not too bad, it would save me time since I'm there for that, and the whole crew coming for the CCs could stay an extra day and do it for your constituency with great pleasure.
Okay, thank you for that.
And we'll work. The contact for that is Chris Maldini, but I'm sure David will support you on that and we'll make it all happen.
Okay, thank you. And just one final.
Oh, sorry, Tony. Go ahead.
Quick point. I was very interested to hear you speak about the MIGworks.
Yes.
And one of the things that went through my mind is I think a number of us here, we've been involved in not initiatives with ICANN, but initiatives in trying to bring the ITU community, particularly on board.
Yes, yes, and Alain has talked to me about these, yes.
It hasn't really been that successful, if I'm honest, and I think in some areas, particularly in areas, for instance, IP addressing, where we've tried to reach out and get a better understanding and an education, we always end up where we change very few people's views, and there isn't enough follow-up. So one of the things I would certainly suggests may help is actually having a plan beforehand, how you can follow up, because it isn't just a case of presenting that on the day and making a good stand so that people understand.
Yes.
It's the follow-up that counts.
Correct.
That's the part that's been missing.
Correct. I second you on the fact that we do a lot of events, but we don't follow through. We need less events and more follow-through. I agree with you on that. What we had missing is a structure of follow-through. We had people who were very well-meaning, who would show up at these meetings and make the right presentations and then go away and then be busy with the next meeting. So Sally, whom you will meet today, and this is very important. Actually, I didn't cover that. Can I buy 5 minutes? This is very important. What you just said makes me think of something, because you will meet Sally, and I want you to discuss this with her. I'm going to draw this, if you don't mind.
Okay.
There was a bear pack that I could get this to see. I can't draw because there are people on the phone. Let me be verbal. That's okay. Tell Steve, yeah. I forgot to keep on. So let me explain to you what Sally's role is, because that will directly solve what you just said, Tony, I think. We have an issue in that when we engage with passion, we engage with intensity, but we don't follow up on engagement. That's irritating a lot of people. And that would be okay if we have a small community. Back to Heather's point, now we're going to have people all over the world. We're doing, just in March, we're doing events all over the world. We have a lot of things going on now. So Sally now leads our engagement vice presidents and their staffs. She leads them. She owns that layer of engagement, that front layer that deals with any event on the outside. Now, who she engages with and what is her strategy of engagement comes from three areas. Okay, this is very important. It comes from Tarek Kamel, who is responsible for our governmental engagement. So he feeds her. He says, look, in these regions where you have all these VPs, I need this work done in Asia, this work done in Europe. So you direct your VPs to help me get this strategy implemented in these regions. Similarly, she now has a new guy who just started. You will meet him. Will they meet Cyrus? Okay. Cyrus is in the building. You should meet him. He's a new vice president. He is the vice president of our DNS industry contracted parties. He's new. He just started. He's a week on the job. So this person will tell Sally, look, I'm responsible for the contracted parties. This is my strategy for your regions. This is what I need done in your regions. And then the third and last person that will feed Sally that is Dishman, who's responsible for the SOs and ACs. So he would go to Sally and say, for me to engage with the SOs and ACs in these regions, this is the plan. Now, he should produce that plan by talking to all of you. And this is, by the way, David's new role. So in addition to his policy development management role, he's also now the head of engagement for the SOs and ACs. So any engagement outreach activities related to bringing more people into our SO and AC structures has to come out of David, and David has to get it from you. So I invite you to participate in that new way we're engaging, where everything goes through these three key people, and then Sally puts them together and produces her engagement plan for 2014. And that's how we're working now. This way, Sally follows up, Sally executes what the three people tell her they need, and reports back on that, and he then, in a way, he's Sally's customer. Right? And you need to tell him, what is it that you want to achieve with the business community in every one of these regions? It's part of the input that needs to come up to him, him to Sally, and Sally will deliver it. I just wanted to share this with you. Would have been easier with a picture, but since we have on the phone, at least I hope I was descriptive enough so you appreciate how we're doing our engagement and outreach, strategic planning, and then delivery at the level of Sally. And that's where I will hold Sally responsible for follow-up. So don't just do a MIGworks in the Middle East and tell all the Arabs, you know, here's internet governance, you don't need to go to the UN, it works, MIGWorks, come to us, this is how it works, and here's ISOC, and here's W3C, and here's the RIRs, and you can work with all of us. But then follow up with their engagement, right? Follow up with their engagement and report back to each community what we've done to engage their community. Now, you may be sitting there saying, why are you doing all these things and we're just finding out about them now from you? You must be thinking that. Why didn't you tell us ahead of time you're doing something in Dubai or in Addis Abeba? So the Dubai and Addis Abeba MIGWorks are what I call our pilots with the IGF. So we're going to see how it works. And with the ATU, we're inviting the ATU, the IGF, we're going to see how it works. ISOC is coming, RIRs are coming, we're going to see how it all comes together. If it's successful, I already have told my team to budget and plan to work with the whole community to do this across the globe. And then we will need deep engagement with you so that we're not just doing these things in a vacuum, we're doing them after we've discussed them with you, you understood what is their value, and you've helped us get the right people there, and you've helped us follow up with the right people after that. Is that helpful, Tony?
Yes, very helpful. Thank you.
And we have one last question from Mark. Okay, I'm all yours.
Mark Trachtenberg.
Mark, thank you.
First, thank you for your time and your candor. It's very refreshing. My question or comment is, you discussed the importance of shoring up the framework of the policy development process.
Yeah.
So the policy versus implementation and just creating a more effective structure, particularly with regards to the stresses that will be put on the current system due to the influx of all these new participants in the community through new GTLDs. Has any thought been given to also shoring up the framework of the structure of the DNSO and, you know, whether the current structure will still really be effective in this new reality of all these participants that really are blurring the current and past distinctions that maybe weren't even so effective before, but now you have, you know, companies that maybe before would have been in the IPC or the BC, but now are registries and or registrars, and, you know, it seems like the current system may not be effective when such a large number of entities really belong in so many different constituencies.
Yes, we are looking into that, and there is a major project effort that is commissioned by David, but led by Denise Michel, who now reports to me and is looking after specific structural issues. I do believe everything you said is spot on in the sense that we do have a creaking situation. It may survive, but it also may not. We're seeing already some of the difficulties because of that. This is a pinhole under the house. Just like what is the definition of policy versus implementation? Are our structures capable of embracing the growth we're about to see? The answer is most people are doubting they will. But I don't have categorical information that says they're going to fail. So I asked Denise to work with David and his team to actually start an analysis of that and to get back to me as soon as possible. And I have deadlines on everything I ask people to do. But as soon as I have this and I review it and if it meets my at least initial test of satisfaction, then I need to put it to the committee and say, look, here are our issues. And I met with Jonathan Robinson in Amsterdam on Friday and discussed some of that at a very high level, just to tell him that I'm looking into that and I need his help. And I think that most of the leaders of the community understand there is an issue. No one is running away and doing this. You know, they're saying there is an issue. It's just how we address it. And I'm a great believer that before I come out and put everything on the table, I need to understand things inside a little bit myself. Unfortunately, I'm an engineer at heart, so I have to get to the bottom of it. What is really breaking up? And what is the deep analysis of that, rather than just the commentary on it? So I'm in that process right now. I'm hoping, again, with the frankly little time I have, but I'm looking for the analysis, and as soon as I get it, I will get back to you on that. I will get back to the whole community on that. But there is an issue, Mark. You're spot on. Sorry. The facts. Okay. I'm sorry I took more time than you had allotted me on the agenda. I hope this was helpful. I will go meet your colleagues next door. And I think I will see all of you again for lunch.
That's correct.
Today?
Today.
Today. I'll be back for lunch. You won't get rid of me easily. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.